Alrighty, hello again everyone, and welcome to it, the Valentine's Day edition. Oh yes, get all warm and fuzzy, of the Daily Daily Caller podcast. I am Derek Hunter, I am your host. Welcome to the program. Lots of stuff to get to, tons of things to talk about. You can email the show, as always, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. I read all of them, respond to most of them, and if you want to enter to win the signed copy of the Glenn Beck book, Control, email that address I just gave and make sure you mention in there, preferably in the subject line, that you want to be entered to the contest. I'll draw tomorrow, so you'll find out on Friday's show if you won. Sadly, we only have one signed book to give away, so I've gotten a ton of entries. I feel bad, but I only have one. I can't give away what I don't have. So there you go. I'll give away more. I've got a stockpile of books that are signed that I should probably get out of my house. So we'll give those away in the coming weeks. It takes me a little while sometimes to get to the post office because I'm paying the postage on all this stuff too. And I dragged the older kid with me to the post office. She's surprisingly not as much help as you would think, being 18 months old at a post office. But she's cute, so she's got that going for her. All right, there is a ton of stuff to get to. I always appreciate you sharing, telling a friend. We reached 300 reviews on iTunes yesterday. That was very exciting. Thank you for that. Keep doing those reviews. You don't even have to write a review, although that would be cool as well. You just rate the stars, the ratings. We got 300 ratings up there. Not too shabby for a show that isn't even a year old. And that's all because of you and word of mouth. You're the only advertising we got, and I appreciate it. That's why I try to give you things. Not only just news and entertainment, but stuff, literal stuff, I can mail to you. So we'll have more contests, like I say, in the future. Also, on tomorrow's program, we have the big interview with Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Ben Carson. That's right. Man, much smarter than me, who didn't make me feel dumb. He was nice to me. It's a good interview. You will enjoy it. Make a little news out of it, too. Been holding it and keeping it quiet, and I'm not going to blow it now. You'll just have to listen tomorrow. Okay, the big news late last night, the giant bill has dropped. Oh, yes, the bill to keep the government open. Don't you feel safe now knowing that the government will likely remain open? All is well. There is joy in Mudville. Apparently, it is the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2019. And they released it just in time for Valentine's Day. So if you're pressed for a gift for your special someone this Valentine's Day, you can print off all 1,159 pages of the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2019, because nothing says I love you like giving somebody legislation. This is how insane this is. It is 1,159 pages long, according to Jamie Dupree, who is a reporter for Cox Radio, WSB out of Atlanta, and a bunch of other radio stations. Very, very reliable reporter. 1,159 pages. The summary of it is 609 pages. If you've ever read legislation, you know what torture is. Legislation is awful to read. The people who write it have to be both sadists and masochists. They have to be masochistic to write like that, because no human being thinks like that. And to put it out there, to know it, it's, let's see, how can I best describe this? The United States Code is hundreds of thousands of pages long. Just gigantic. It's essentially a rolling roster of all federal laws. Legislation usually, what could be a couple of pages. It'd be pretty basic if they were not interested in trying to hide things. It says in U.S. Code, whatever, blah, 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 number dash, this, that, and the other thing, where it reads this, and it's a half a sentence, it shall be replaced with this, and it's another half a sentence. Well, that doesn't really tell you anything. You have no freaking clue what it is in the U.S. Code, so then you have to go to the giant U.S. Code and find it. and say, okay, well, what does this mean? And what does it mean if you replace these four words with these four or five words? I had to once read the Medicare Modernization Act back in 2004, I think it was, and I still haven't recovered. It was very, very long. It was monstrous and awful. You can't make heads nor tails of it. And our elected officials will have 1,159 pages of legislation with a 609-page summary. Now, the summary is just what they decided to put in there. It's not necessarily accurate. It's not necessarily everything. It's whoever wrote it thought this is important, and then they skipped over other parts of it. They're going to have, maybe on a good day, 20 hours to read this thing. They're planning on voting on it today. Last night at about 10 to midnight, or 20 to midnight, is when this bill was introduced. I guess it was introduced at 11:51 p.m. And members of Congress are likely going to vote on this tomorrow. Today, I mean. How many of them you think are going to have a freaking clue what's in this bill? How many of them will have read it? How many of them will understand it? How many of them are capable of understanding it? If you've ever watched a congressional hearing, you really have to wonder, what are they, is this some sort of, what's wrong with this person, basically? Like, what? How did this person get elected? There's so many members of Congress on both sides of the aisle where you look at them and you go, who was against this person? Who lost to this moron? I actually have an example of that later on in the show. But yeah, don't you feel good? Don't you feel secure in your liberty knowing that the government is about to pass a massive spending bill with less than a day to look at it that was just written and filed last night, 9 minutes to midnight, and they're going to do it because they want to go home. They want to be off next week. Next week is a scheduled recess, and they don't want to be here. Members of Congress don't really like working. They love being members of Congress. The perks that go along with that are mind-blowing. But to actually work, that's a little bit too much like work. Remember when Nancy Pelosi took over as Speaker of the House this time? One of the big promises was we will never rush through legislation on anything. Everybody, we're going to give plenty of time. It was either 48 or 72 hours to read and digest legislation or bills before they are voted on, because we are not going to be like those Republicans. Well, when Republicans were in control of the House of Representatives, they came in saying, we will not be like those Democrats. We will give everybody 48 hours to review legislation before we even consider voting on it. You see how I'm getting at here? Both sides do this. It's not surprising. They sneak things. This is how they sneak so much stuff in there. How much did you learn about, say, Obamacare in the weeks after it had been passed from Congress and signed by the President of the United States? They were still combing through it and discovering, hey, wait a second, this does X, Y, and Z. This could be problematic. This isn't what we were told. And that's where what I was talking about earlier with writing legislation, being evil and having to comb through giant volumes of U.S. code to try and figure out what in the hell this stuff means, that's where that comes into play. Even if you gave somebody 48 hours to read Obamacare, they likely wouldn't have gotten it because it's massive. And you have to think about the implications, not just the word changes. And then the reactions of the private sector, how businesses would naturally react. They weren't interested in all of that. It was a power grab designed to eventually collapse the private insurance market. It just worked too quickly. Anyway, this bill will, as we know, provide $1.37 billion to build 55 miles of border barriers. They can't be concrete, but it will provide that money. It's a start, I suppose. The president still hasn't indicated whether or not he'll sign this. I hope somebody is reading this thing, somebody capable of understanding legislation. There are some human beings out there I think they might be robots, I don't know, who do speak legislation. I used to work with some of them. They could read this stuff and go, yeah, well, this is exactly what it does. And I think, what happened to you in your childhood? How can you understand this crap? But there are people. I hope they're reading it. I don't want any Saturday morning surprises because they're rushing to get this done by Friday night, because Friday at midnight, if they do not come up with a bill that the president will sign and both houses can pass, another government shutdown. Oh, the sad tales of woe will start rolling. There is another alternative out there, though, that is kind of interesting. The House Freedom Caucus, the conservatives in the House of Representatives, if you just watch the media, you'd think everybody was just a far-right extremist if they have an R after their name. That's sadly not the case. It would be much nicer and much better for the country if it were, and they might have actually won re-election if many of them were like that. But the House Freedom Caucus has introduced a continuing resolution to keep the government funded for one more week, so that Congress can work to improve this steaming pile of manure that Democrats and squishy Republicans agreed upon. That may peel off some Republicans. There are going to be some Democrats who are going to vote against this because it does provide $1.375 billion to build a border wall that can't be made of concrete. It has to be some other material. So they're not, you know, there's a huge Democratic part of their caucus that does not want any barriers. They don't even want any borders, perfectly honest with you. So they're going to vote against this because it provides something for that. So they're going to need some Republican votes to get this passed. Also could run into some tough stuff in the Senate, but it's less likely over there. So this alternative comes up. Maybe we can keep the government funded for another week, since everybody wants to avoid a government shutdown. Those poor government workers. Oh, those poor government workers. By the way, the Democrats have included language, according to initial reports. Again, nobody really knows what's in this thing, but they're being told things by staff and tweeting it out as if it's fact and verified, that this bill, they're pushing for, Democrats insisted upon back pay for the shutdown for government contractors. That's never been done before. Government contractors, that's part of the deal. You understand that. But Democrats want them paid now. They're trying to buy more votes and more supporters with our money. It's where they live. That could be a bone of contention. Apparently, the White House is not a fan of that provision. They also included a pay raise for government employees because Democrat priorities are to take care of Democrat constituencies. And the government workforce, the federal government workforce, is a huge, huge Democratic constituency. They included a 1.9% pay raise. There was a pay freeze, in effect, for all government employees. Democrats decided that had to be overridden, that had to go. So congratulations to them. They can't spare the pocket change from a discarded pair of jeans in the pile of money that the federal government spends every year to build a border wall in, like, what was it, 800 miles or something like that? There's very important areas that Border Patrol says they need a wall. No, they couldn't do that. But a million or several million federal employees, they deserve a raise. Because, you know, don't you know your government is super duper efficient? And if government employees don't deserve a raise, who does, quite honestly? See, life is about priorities, ladies and gentlemen. And these are the priorities of the Democratic Party. Not you, them, their own constituencies, the members of the federal employees unions who give almost exclusively to Democrats. See, they're paying themselves, essentially. Democrats are paying themselves. You take care of the people who take care of you and screw everybody else. They know that those union truckloads of money will continue to roll into the Democratic coffers while whining constantly about the need to get money out of politics, ironically. So that's your government at work. We still don't know what the White House is going to do. We still don't actually know what this bill would do. It's likely to be signed. It's likely to be rushed through. And then we're likely to discover some really interesting nuggets in this monster as people have a chance to read it and digest it. Isn't our government just great? Speaking of just how great, in air quotes, our government is, I told you yesterday about how Senator Mitch McConnell is going to bring up the Green New Deal for a vote in the United States Senate. A bunch of Democrats, they love this. They're all signed on to the Green New Deal. It is great. Let's get rid of airplanes. Let's get rid of the internal combustion engine. Let's retrofit every building in the country in the next 10 years and figure out how to pay for it later. We got mom and dad's credit card. Let's go for it. Well, one of the authors of it, there's a House sponsor, which is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and a Senate sponsor, Ed Markey, from Massachusetts. I don't know what the hell happened to Massachusetts that they would send a moron like this to the Senate, but hey, it's their history, it's their tradition. Apparently, the Senate sponsor of this bill, the co-author of it, this resolution, isn't too happy about the idea of his legislation, his idea, actually getting a vote in the United States Senate. You think, what? That doesn't make any sense. Why would you write something if you didn't want it ever voted on? Ed Markey took to his Twitter the other day and wrote, quote, "Don't let Mitch McConnell fool you. This is nothing but an attempt to sabotage the movement we are building. He wants to silence your voice so Republicans don't have to explain why they are climate change deniers. Mitch McConnell wants this to end. This is just the beginning." He's very upset that he's getting his way. And as a member of the minority party in the United States Senate, you don't get your way very often. He should be ecstatic. If this is real, if this is something more than just a show, they're just peacocking around to try and make their activist base think they're doing something. No, he actually gets a chance at this thing. Why are Republicans climate deniers? Because they actually listen to the science. Science isn't majority vote. Science isn't a show of hands. If science becomes that, if science becomes, well, you know what, the vast majority of people agree that this is probably happening, if that becomes science, then conservatives should flood the field of biology. Pro-lifers should flood the field of biology and then insist on a vote, roll call vote if you must, to find out when life begins. And watch it, once you get a majority of scientists, biologists, saying that life begins at conception and therefore abortion is murder, suddenly the party of science would not be interested in science anymore. See the double standard there? Ed Markey continued in another tweet, "This isn't a new Republican trick. By rushing a vote on the Green New Deal resolution, Republicans want to avoid true national debate and kill our efforts to organize. We're having the first national conversation on climate change in a decade. We can't let Republicans sabotage it." Giving him a vote on what he swears he wants, which he co-wrote, which he personally introduced in the United States Senate, is now an attempt to sabotage it. Is he scared to death? Democrats don't want to vote on this thing. They want to tell their voters that they really support this and they think it's great, but it's just because those Republicans control the United States Senate that we can't have it. That's why we can't have nice things. That Donald Trump is in the White House. He's the one stopping us, and they're going to just destroy the world, and they're going to do it out of big business and just meanie people. And I don't know about you, but if you believe that what Democrats believe, and they believe that everybody knows that the world is basically going to come to an end in about 12 years because of climate change, if you believe that and you believe that big businesses are pulling the Republican strings and making sure that they block any attempt to stop the destruction of the world in a dozen years, you must believe that somehow those people pulling those strings think that's a good business decision. That's a good business model. Like there are smoke-filled boardrooms filled with rich white guys sitting there lighting Cuban cigars with $100 bills saying, you know what, I realize that in a decade or so, our company, our existence, is just going to end. But up until then, let's live high on the hog. Yeah, there's this possible way to not destroy all life on Earth over here, but that's going to impact our bottom line for the next 10 years. So I'd much rather just have the company go completely out of existence, along with all of humanity, rather than a cave to this idea of regulation and big government. That's insane. Who thinks that, you know what would really be great for our bottom line? If we killed all of our customers. Anybody, can I get a vote on that? Can I get a second? All right, then let's put it to a vote. Hey, it's unanimous. We've decided as a company the best model for growth in the future, both near and long term, is killing all of our customers. Let's gabble this sucker out of the end of this meeting and go golf. That's what the Democrats want you to believe is going on in corporate boardrooms all the time. They really think that somebody goes, you know what, I got the best plan ever. And now Ed Markey is trying to sell that to people. The Republicans are big business. They want to sabotage this climate deal. What? They're giving you a vote. Did you write legislation so it could never be voted on, Ed? These people are absolutely, positively, 100% insane. And speaking of insane, remember, I already mentioned her, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Yes, the Democrats' favorite Democrat, the progressives' favorite obsession. She has found a place to live. You remember when she first came to Washington, D.C., she didn't have any place to live. It was very upsetting. She was concerned that she wasn't going to be able to afford a place to live in Washington, D.C., unless and until she started getting those big, fat government checks. Well, fear not. She isn't sleeping in a refrigerator box under a bridge somewhere. She found an apartment near the Navy Yard in a building, and this is kind of funny, a building where a studio apartment rent for that is more than $2,000 a month. We don't know which apartment she lives in. We don't know what kind of apartment she lives in. But the Washington Free Beacon found an apartment, or found out where she lives. And they found that it's a very, very expensive. In fact, it's been voted the nicest building in apartment building in Washington, D.C. The Navy area is down by where the Nationals play. It's newly gentrified. It's kind of funny that she would move to this area. It's close to Capitol Hill. It's about a 15-minute walk to her new office. And you think, okay, well, at least she's putting her money where her mouth is. Because while she's overspending on her apartment, like every good progressive hypocrite with a lot of money does, she's at least saving the planet by not using the internal combustion engine that she wants to ban for you, me, and everybody else. Not so fast. She's actually driven to work every day. She has a car come and pick her up, and it drives her to work. Members of Congress can do this. Most don't because it's seen as elitist, as ridiculous, and certainly unnecessary. She's not even driving herself. Most members drive themselves. I remember my boss, Conrad Burns, bought a used pickup truck that he had here in D.C., and that's what he would drive back and forth to work all the time. And it's just a beat-up old pickup truck because you just need to get in to work, and that's it. Other members would staff a driver, and then that person would essentially be a chauffeur. Remember this next time Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or some progressive member of Congress whines about the haves and the have-nots and the discrepancy between the rich, the 1%, and the rest of us. That they are living, she is living, like the 1%. I'd imagine if a studio apartment costs more than $2,000 in her apartment building, I highly doubt she lives in a studio, that she's probably paying $2,600 to $3,000 a month. She's making the money. She's making $174,000 a year. She lives in a family-owned apartment in New York where she only has to pay the fees, the homeowners association fees. So she's not got a lot of expenses up there. She's living large, and she's got a driver. So she doesn't have to be bothered by the peons as she goes to and fro work. There's a word for that. It's starts with an H, ends with a hypocrisy. Total and complete flaming hypocrite. But hey, she's a Democrat. That's why it'll only be reported in conservative websites. It'll never make MSNBC. And if it ever does, it will be her saying, people threaten me and therefore I have to be protected. I wonder if her driver carries a gun. Probably. But we'll never know because that question will never be asked because she won't get anywhere near anybody who would ever ask it. Speaking of questions asked and not answered, there was a hearing up on Capitol Hill yesterday of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. This is the one where the rabid anti-sexist racist Ilhan Omar sits. She's the one who really thinks that Jewish money's controlling everything. I think her album with 21 Savage drops in a couple of weeks should be good, and she'll be missed while she's on tour. Ilhan Omar, she was a refugee from Somalia. You would think she would be grateful to the country that saved her from a life in an absolute hellhole, but not. She's not. She hates it because she hates freedom. She wants socialism, and she loves communism. During the hearing, Elliot Abrams, who's a diplomat, a longtime diplomat, worked for this country through many, many administrations, was up there. He is the new special envoy to Venezuela. If you haven't heard, because you've only been watching mainstream news outlets, Venezuela is in a mess, in a messy situation right now. Their government is collapsing. Their economy has collapsed. People are starving. They've eaten their house pets. They've eaten zoo animals. They're now combing through garbage. And their authoritarian dictator who won't leave, Nicolas Maduro, who stole the election in blatant corruption, he's blocked off aid from the United States. He's not interested in it. He says that that Venezuela will take care of itself. It can't. He's getting fatter. His people have lost an average of about 20 pounds last year each because they don't have any food. They don't have any toilet paper. They don't have any jobs. But their leader isn't going anywhere. There's been a split in the government. The United States and most of the rest of the world has recognized opposition leader Juan Guaido as the legitimate leader of Venezuela. But Maduro still has the support of the military. And the people have been taken to the streets. It is potentially a disaster. Millions of people have been flowing into countries, neighboring countries, in desperate search of food. That's how pathetic it is. But Maduro insists there's nothing wrong going on down there, and he's not going to leave. He's actually doing what's best for the Venezuelan people. He's a lot like Democrats here in this country, which is why so many of those Democrats, particularly the rabid leftists, think that we are orchestrating a coup against this wonderful government down in Venezuela. They're really, really sick people. They really do believe that. To that end, Ilhan Omar decided, rather than asking serious questions of Elliot Abrams during this oversight hearing, she was going to make personal attacks against him and vile attacks against the United States of America, the country that saved her from a life in absolute hell. Because they're ungrateful. Liberals are wholly ungrateful. Everything they get, they think they deserve, and they think they deserve more. I want you to listen to this, and you've probably seen clips of it in the last 24 hours, but I want you to hear the entire exchange, cut up, of course, not just straight through, with some commentary thrown in there, and recognize that Ilhan Omar is reading this. Somebody provided her with this. And she has no idea what she's talking about. She just hears awful things about Mr. Abrams, who she calls Adams, even though everybody knows the names of the witnesses at congressional hearings, and he has a name placard in front of him that reads Abrams, not Adams. She calls him Mr. Abrams, or Mr. Adams, and she mispronounces a whole bunch of things. She's not, she's familiar. She speaks English. She speaks fluent English. But when you give somebody a script, I don't know who her handlers are, but I guarantee you they hate some Jews. When you give somebody a script and they have to cold read it, maybe they're not the best with doing that, with the performance, even though they're better in performances in other areas, which is the overall theme. She just can't read. Here's the opening salvo in this exchange. Pay attention to the mispronunciation of obvious words.
Mr. Adams, in 1991, you pleaded guilty to 2 counts of withholding information from Congress regarding your involvement in the Iran Contra affair, for which you were later pardoned by President George H.W. Bush.
Iran Contra, and you were pardoned. Pardoned? Pardoned? I get that somebody just gave you a script to read, Omar, but pardoned isn't that hard of a word. And where have you lived your whole life that you never heard Contra pronounced? That you do Contra, I don't know. Somebody who's good, somebody who's bad. See, Democrats always side with the people who hate this country. She goes on, and we're going to play it, goes on to really bitch and piss and moan about the liberation of Central America from the boot heel of communism. She doesn't see that as a good thing. She thinks this is wrong, and the people would have had paradise like Cuba or Venezuela. She's really mad that Maduro might be forced out by the people of Venezuela in Venezuela. The leftists think, well, Maduro is the elected president, and that just should be the way it is. He should be there for, he's doing good. Everybody's equal down there. Everybody's suffering equally. What's the problem? It's utopia to them. I wish they'd move there. But she missed Mr. Adams. His name is Elliot Abrams. And to explain why she butchered his name, why she used the wrong name, and why she went on this line of questioning, I just want to point out that Elliot Abrams is Jewish. Yes, Elliot Abrams is Jewish. He's also been a rabid anti-communist for most of his career when communism was still on the march around the globe. That means leftists doubly hate him. Ilhan Omar triply hates him because she doubly hates him because he's Jewish, and then she hates him because he hates communism. So, the exchange continues.
I fail to understand why members of this committee or the American people should find any testimony that you give today to be truthful.
If I can respond to that.
It wasn't a question.
That was not a question.
I reserve the right to my time.
It is not right.
That was not a question.
Members of this committee can attack
on February 8th,
who is not permitted to reply.
That was not a question. Thank you for your participation.
What a swine. What a spoiled little brat. What an obnoxious piece of trash. A gutter snipe. Ilhan Omar is. Now, remember, this is just a day after she unequivocally apologized for all of her anti-Semitic comments and then equivocated the apology by saying other people have attacked me, therefore I can attack anybody I want, especially then they're Jews. She hates Jews, and Elliot Abrams is Jewish. So she's going to smear him, and she's not going to give him a chance to respond because gutter snipes don't live that way. They are bomb throwers, and then they run back. And she's not very bright. She was given a script. She read it without question. It's, oh, hey, this guy's Jewish, so anything you think bad about him, it has to be true. Let's just throw that out there into the record and not let him respond. Normally, under circumstances like this, the chairman of a committee would be the adult in the room and say, no, you can't just attack a witness like that and not give them a chance to respond. But the Democrats are in charge of the House of Representatives now, so all bets are off. Ilhan Omar is allowed to get away with much worse. It goes on, and we'll play it for you. But I just want to point out that Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and most of the Democratic Party these days are essentially the spawn of intersectionality and identity politics. they got together, they merged, and they pooped out a kid. And it's the freshman class of the Democratic Party. They are entitled. They are quick to claim that they are being attacked, that they are victims. Why are you coming after me? It's because I'm brown, isn't it? No, it's because you're a piece of trash. It's because you're what people flush if they eat a lot of fiber. That's why we come after you. It doesn't matter which bathroom you use. It has to do with you as an individual, you as a human being. But thanks to our ridiculous media and the left in this country that buy into this idea of intersectionality, which is an ever-changing flowchart of victimhood status. And the higher you rate on this flowchart of victimhood status, the more above criticism you are. A black woman, a black Somali woman, a black Muslim Somali woman. Well, it's hard to get more victim than that. Even though she's a member of Congress. No, she's always a victim and she's oppressed by society. Therefore, she can't be a bigot. She can't be questioned. And to question her is to question her not because of what she says or what she does or what she advocates or her rabid anti-Semitism. It is because she is a black Muslim woman. She's got a trip victimhood. It's a mental disorder. Liberalism is a mental disorder, and Ilhan Omar is one of the poster children for it. She continues here. This exchange, it does blow up a little bit, and then she starts attacking the country because she hates this country too.
On February 8th, 1982, you testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee about U.S. policy in El Salvador. In that hearing, you dismissed as communist propaganda report about the massacre of El Mozote, in which more than 800 civilians, including children as young as 2 years old, were brutally murdered by U.S.-trained troops. During that massacre, some of those troops bragged about raping a 12-year-old girl before they killed them, girls before they killed them. You later said that the U.S. policy in El Salvador was a fabulous achievement. Yes or no, do you still think so?
From the day that President Duarte was elected in a free election to this day, El Salvador has been a democracy. That's a fabulous achievement.
El Salvador. El Salvador. Where the hell is that? Yes, El Salvador has free and fair elections now, but that's not good enough for Ilhan Omar. That somebody we trained to fight communists may have done something horrible, therefore we're responsible for all of it. Well, if she wants to go by the guilt by association, especially loose association, Ilhan Omar is a Muslim and a rabid anti-Semite. I think, just thinking about it off the top of my head, I could recall hundreds, if not thousands, of things people with that mentality have committed. Would she be held responsible for those things? No, of course not. She wouldn't stand for it. Intersectionality would not allow for it, even though she may well be sympathetic to many of those things. Just a very interesting juxtaposition. You could hear her reading there and then correcting herself as she was reading. Again, she was looking right at a piece of paper, reading this script provided to her. She's not very bright. She has no business being there. She shouldn't be. You can't hate Israel and Jews. You can't be a rabid anti-Semite and sit on the House Foreign Relations Committee. You shouldn't be there. But it's the Democrats. Ilhan Omar is the victim here, not the people she hates, not the people she smears, not the people she attacks, which now is starting to include the United States of America, because we fought communists and she supports communism. I'm not kidding at all. Listen.
Yes or no, do you think that massacre was a fabulous achievement that happened under our watch?
The United States is guilty. The United States is the problem, not communism, nothing else. The United States, everything bad that happens is the United States' fault. And it was done to sweet, sweet, nourishing communists who only wanted people to live in harmony and peace under their tyrannical rule. I wish we were British so we could throw around some of the colloquialisms that they use on a regular basis. Or as somebody told me the other day, Scots do it a lot too. I don't know if you can figure out what word I'm thinking of, and I'll never admit to it, but British people are known for tossing this around, and it would just be the perfect word.
That is a ridiculous question, and
yes or no?
No.
I will take that as a yes.
So Abram says no, and Omar says, I'll take that as a yes. Isn't she nice? Isn't she lovely? You got to think, what in the hell is wrong with Minnesota that they would elect someone like this creature? And the answer is there's a large Somali population up in Minnesota. They've been resettled there, refugees. And as I said, she is the end result of Democrats beating the drum of identity politics. She's Somali, they're Somali, therefore they must vote for a Somali. That's what happens with the Democratic Party. You can only be represented by somebody who looks like you, somebody with the same skin tone, same background, same religion, same whatever. And the end result is a racist pile of excrement like Ilhan Omar sitting on the Foreign Relations Committee, able to spew her bile and attack a Jewish man, essentially for being Jewish, and attack the United States for being on the side of liberty against communism.
I am not going to respond to that kind of personal attack, which is not a question.
Yes or no, would you support an armed faction within Venezuela that engages in war crimes, crimes against humanity or genocide, if you believe they were serving U.S. interest, as you did in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua?
That is a member of Congress and a progressive hero celebrated on CNN and MSNBC in the pages of the New York Times and the Washington Post and liberal rags across the country, essentially accusing Elliot Abrams of supporting war crimes and crimes against humanity in the past and saying and accusing the United States of being ready to commit more of them. And not a single Democrat had a problem with this. None. They just all sat there and let it slide. The committee chairman could have gaveled this to order and said, you know what, woman, this is ridiculous. We're going to move on. Or why don't you keep your questions to the matters at hand or get out of this fantasy land that you live in and try to be a serious adult? Nobody pulled her aside afterwards. It was all just these ramblings of an anti-American lunatic who happens to be a Democratic member of Congress in good standing.
I am not going to respond to that question. I'm sorry. I don't think this entire line of questioning is meant to be real questions, and so I will not reply.
He's not going to reply. He's not going to play this game. I'm sorry, Eva Braun. I'm not interested in sitting here and listening to you anymore. She wasn't done. She came back. And I know you're sitting there going, Derek, why are you playing all of this? Because you have to know what the other side is really up to. A 20-second clip, one 20-second clip, even on Fox News, doesn't give you the full context and doesn't paint for you the full depth of this woman's vileness and what the Democratic Party has become by embracing her. Now, after one or two more clips, I can't remember how many are left, you will be then armed to be able to go out and explain to your friends who maybe saw a clip out of context and said, she was rude, but I don't know. It didn't seem all that out of the ordinary. Now you're going to be armed to be able to come back at these people, or you can pull up this part of the podcast and play it for them and let them know the depths of the depravity of the Democratic Party. Speaking of which, here's some more.
Whether you, under your watch, a genocide will take place and you will look the other way because American interests were being upheld is a fair question, because the American people want to know that anytime we engage a country, that we think about what our actions could be and how we believe our values are being furthered. That is my question. Will you make sure that human rights are not violated and that we uphold international and human rights?
She believes the United States of America, a country she is a voluntary citizen of, is committing genocide and human rights violations around the world. and that we could do it again easily. And hell, we're kind of planning on it. We're getting aroused at the prospect of doing it down in Venezuela, when the real violation of human rights and humanity in general, and the crimes against humanity, are being committed by the Venezuelan government, the socialist Venezuelan government, which she supports. She despises the United States and admires Nicolas Maduro and thinks he should be left alone in Venezuela. I would invite her to move to Venezuela. She has no loyalty to this country, clearly. She was brought here when she was younger because her homeland was a piece of trash. Turns out that she brought that mentality with her, and it became her. Abrams finally does respond to this, and he's the adult in the room. And this, by the way, throughout this whole thing, Omar is smirking. She's got what my mother would call a shit-eating grin on her face. That just really adds to the pile of steaming garbage that she is.
I suppose there is a question in there, and the answer is that the entire thrust of American policy in Venezuela is to support the Venezuelan people's effort to restore democracy to their country. That's our policy.
I don't think anybody disputes that. The question I had for you is that does the interest of the United States include protecting human rights and include protecting people against genocide?
That is always the position of the United States.
Thank you. I yield back my time.
Ilhan Omar, it's hard to tell which Ilhan Omar hates more, the United States or Jews. But right there, she just had a Jewish American that she really hated. It was the harmonic convergence, the crossing over. It was the Venn diagram of her two great hates. And she made herself look like a complete ass. And now you've heard the whole exchange. Now you see the depths of the entire picture. By the way, her unequivocal apology yesterday, she's been fundraising off of that ever since. She's got Facebook ads up there targeting progressives so that she can raise campaign funds off of it, because she will not be silenced. She's speaking truth to power that she apologized. She was genuinely sincere in her apology for being a raging anti-Semite, but she will not be silenced in her anti-Semitism and give her money. These people. Speaking of lunatic leftists, there is another member. There's so many members of Congress who are absolutely insane. Gwen Moore. She is a Democrat from Wisconsin. There was a House Ways and Means Committee yesterday. And I know, people, you won't hear this criticism, certainly not this harsh criticism, elsewhere in conservative media, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. The left has so put the fear of God in everybody that you're not allowed to criticize a woman of color or a Muslim woman of color like Ilhan Omar. Congresswoman Moore is a woman of color. She's black. And criticizing her, why, as a white man criticizing her, you're open to charges of racism because, again, in this stupid intersectionality flowchart that they've created that is ever moving, if you criticize somebody who's different from you and you're white, you're doing it because you're a racist. Plain and simple. And if they happen to be a minority and a Muslim, well, you're also an Islamophobe. So on and so forth. And you can see how stupid this gets. Personally, I don't give a crap. I call it like it is. I'm not interested and I'm not afraid to have a quote-unquote serious discussion about race. Liberals always say, we need a serious discussion about race in this country. And then every time you try and engage them in a serious discussion about race, you point out the fact that there isn't, you know, a concerted effort. It's not open season on black men, for example, by police. And you show the data that proves that. I did that in my book. It's, well, you're a racist. That's not a rebuttal, and you can't have a serious conversation about anything, or even a casual conversation about anything, as somebody whose knee-jerk response, Pavlovian vomiting up of a charge of some sort of ism or ist or phobia. That's what the modern left is. I don't play that game. I don't give a crap. Come at me. I couldn't care less. Anyway, Congresswoman Moore on, no, just Moore, Democrat from Wisconsin, during this hearing, decided to recount what a Republican congressman, Darren LaHood, said about the economy. Listen to the lack of enthusiasm in her comments recounting how good things are in the economy, because remember, a good, strong, booming economy is not of interest to the Democrats. They don't like it. That means fewer people are going to be dependent on government. That is why during the State of the Union address, Democrats sat on their hands with their heads firmly implanted in their rectums as the president celebrated millions of Americans moving off of food stamps and becoming self-sufficient. They got no interest in that. With that in mind, listen to Gwen Moore talk about the economy in the most condescending and mocking way possible.
My good friend and my good colleague, Mr. LaHood, waxed on about the health of the economy. It's growing faster than ever. GDP is great. Unemployment is at an all-time low. African Americans are doing well. Hispanics are doing well. Wages are rising at the fastest pace in 10 years. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, yeah, everybody's doing well. Blah, blah, blah. Who cares? How does that help the Democratic Party if people are doing well? Blah, blah, blah. It's unbelievable. These Democrats are absolutely unbelievable. They used to try and hide their contempt for, you know, the American people doing well. Now they don't anymore. The veil is completely gone. This is the modern Democratic Party. Blah, blah, yeah, blacks are getting jobs, Hispanics are getting, blah, 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 wages are going up. I don't see how that helps me. She thinks it's a bad thing. She's not alone. Speaking of intersectionality and victimhood and the desire for liberals to seem to be the most woke, Georgetown University, very liberal university, it's supposed to be a Catholic university. They just aren't anymore. They're ostensibly Catholic, but they're really not. This from the College Fix. Georgetown University students will soon vote on whether they want to tax themselves to benefit the descendants of slaves sold by the university in the 1830s. Yes, reparations must be paid for people who are generations and generations and generations removed from this horrible oppression to make up for it. Your white guilt is keeping you up at night. Its student government at Georgetown recently authorized a campus-wide referendum on whether to establish a fund for the families of the 272 men, women, and children sold by Georgetown in 1838. Here's a better idea. Why don't you dig up the bodies of people who were alive in 1838 and tax them? And then give that money to the victims from 1838. Otherwise, it has no bearing on anything. People who live in the past, who look back constantly as if what's in the rearview mirror is more important than what's in the windshield, will forever be hindered. And they deserve to be. If approved, the semesterly fee would begin to be collected in the fall of 2020 and start at $27.20 per student, quote, in honor of the 272 people sold by Georgetown, states the student government resolution approving the referendum. And this is more from the referendum, quote, the proceeds of the GU-272 reconciliation contributions will be allocated for charitable purposes directly benefiting the descendants of the GU-272 and other persons once enslaved by the Maryland Jesuits, with special consideration given to causes and proposals directly benefiting those descendants still residing in proud and underprivileged communities, end quote. Don't you love that? These are rich liberals, for the most part, attending Georgetown. They don't really give a damn about it. They're being able to show how woke they are, but they're going to say they're giving special consideration for causes and proposals directly benefiting. Essentially, those people, they can't take care of themselves, They couldn't possibly take care of themselves. They're victims of society. Almost 200 years ago, their ancestors, and they're still suffering the consequences, still to this day. They're not. Anything wrong in their lives is their fault and through their choices. But they want to say they're residing in proud and underprivileged communities. If you're underprivileged, what are you proud of? Some of the most, and I watch that show Love After Lockup. There's this guy, he's this toothless guy, he's got his head shaved, he's always wearing a wife beater t-shirt, refuses to work, had a meth problem and I think a burglary problem and everything. He's got a good looking girlfriend, fiance, who fell in love with him while he was in prison because she didn't have to deal with his crap every day. He came out and he is not working at all. He's not willing to find a job. He needs time. He wants to have some fun to readapt and live a little. He's 28 years old and he spent most of his adulthood in prison. He's incredibly proud. He's got nothing to be proud of. And I've often found that the people who have the most pride in their personal lives, they have the least to actually be proud of. But that ain't going to stop them. They're the people who will fight somebody because they feel disrespected. There's some slight, and therefore I'll kick your ass. This guy, who happens to be white, by the way, on this show, Love After Lockup, had a job interview at a construction site, and the boss said, all right, you know how to do this. Mix up this paint and then, you know, clear the line, this paint sprayer, and we'll see. If you know how to do that, maybe we got some work for you. And the guy said, well, I'm wearing the wrong shoes. I'm not going to do this. He used the line, I'm not trying to do this, which is just a sign of a single-digit IQ. And it stuck with me. I don't know. That always kind of drove me nuts. And he didn't get the job. He almost got into a fight with the guy he was having an interview with because he found him to be condescending and disrespectful. You just got out of prison. You're a meth head. You're missing a tooth in front on your bottom lip, on your bottom row of teeth. You look like a complete moron. You sound like a complete moron, but oh boy, howdy. He's got a lot of pride. So when I read this, residing in proud and underprivileged communities, you shouldn't be proud to be in an underprivileged community. You should be inspired to work your ass off to get out of one. You should, you know, not everybody has a shining example of what somebody should be and a person to aspire to. Luckily, I was lucky. My parents were never rich, but they were a perfect example of how a married couple should be, what work ethic is, what perseverance is, and I take that with me, and I thank God every day that they were my parents. But you should, sometimes you don't have that in your life, and I understand that, but it exists in the world. And while some people are an inspiration, other people can serve just as well, but as a cautionary tale. That is lost on the left. And these liberals, well, we must help these poor people. They're doing poorly, and they're full of pride and living in underprivileged communities because 180 years ago, their ancestors were sold by Georgetown University. No, that's not the way the world works. It's not the way the world should work. It's just another example of the liberal excuse machine. Don't worry about it. It's whitey patting minorities on the head saying, I know you couldn't possibly do something on your own. Don't worry. We're here for you. We'll protect you. We'll look out for you. It's incredibly condescending. It's progressive. Speaking of progressive, so much of what the left does these days is designed to see who is the most woke. The wokest one wins. And it's usually a bunch of wealthy white people trying to pretend that they're better than everybody else. They care more than everybody else. Oh, they don't do much with their money, and they certainly don't open their homes to people like illegal aliens. But no, they must be allowed in the country. Just keep them on the other side of my wall around my property. Well, this week's entrance into the most woke Olympics is Brie Larson. And I feel I'm upset about this because I wanted to see Captain Marvel. I love the Marvel movies. Marvel comics are far superior to DC in every way, shape, or form. Not only in the comic form, but definitely in the movies. And she plays Captain Marvel, Well, she's on a press tour for Captain Marvel, and she is on a mission as well. She wants to make sure that the journalists who review the movie and those who interview her are not, quote, overwhelmingly white and male, end quote. She sees victimhood. She says, quote, about a year ago, I started paying attention to what my press days looked like and the critics reviewing movies and noticed it appeared to be overwhelmingly white male. Oh, gasp. Maybe nobody wants to watch your crap movies except for people who are assigned it by an editor, and maybe, just maybe, there happen to be more white males as movie reviewers than not. But she's on a mission to make sure that off-white people across the world get a chance to touch the garments of Brie Larson. She cares about the common person. Except she doesn't, actually. She's a flaming pile of garbage herself. Back on October 7th, 2017, Fox News reports, and this was a big controversy on Twitter because she's such a piece of shit. Ugh. Hours after the New York Times broke the news of sexual harassment allegations against movie magnate Harvey Weinstein, many women took to Twitter to share their stories of unwanted sexual advances in daily life. A vocal advocate for women's rights and sexual assault survivors, actress Brie Larson, revealed that she was recently forced to navigate an uncomfortable encounter with a male TSA agent at airport security. You think, what did he do? Did he shove his finger in her butt when frisking her? What was this horrible situation she was put in? She tweeted this. This was the horror that Brie Larson went to. Have a tissue handy for in case the tears start flowing. Quote, I merely smiled at a TSA agent and he asked me for my phone number. To live as a woman is to live life on the defensive. Yes, that's her Me Too moment. She's nailing herself to the cross because a guy she smiled at thought she was attractive too and said, hey, you know, maybe you'd like to go out sometime. Could I get your phone number? Probably not knowing who she is, because who the hell would recognize Brie Larson, especially 2 years ago? Well, people roundly mocked her. One guy responded, how is a guy supposed to win? He thought you were pretty and asked you for your phone number. It's not an assault. Just politely say no and move on. Brie Larson, being the social justice warrior that she is, responded, what you are saying is I was asking for it. A phrase that has disregarded a female's experience for the whole time. Ugh. Somebody else said asking for a number is harassment. Imagine living as a man and trying not to upset feminists. Brie Larson again, because she's an SJW. Yes, I'm a person going through security and the other is an employee of said security. It's inappropriate. Sort of, don't you know your place, you scumbag? You wear a uniform for work. Don't talk to me. I'm an Oscar winner. Go to hell. Someone else said, didn't ask to be in the situation, but people are encouraged through life to make connections. Don't be so soft-skinned to be upset that he tried. And then she responded, I hope you take the time to learn more about the experiences of women. It's real and scary sometimes, and people like you can make it better. Yes, I know you're drenched in tears right now for a millionaire, spoiled Hollywood actress who is so full of herself that she is offended that somebody beneath her station in life dared ask for her phone number. She's Captain Marvel, but don't worry. She's going to make sure that she only talks to non-white men because she's woke. This is the modern left. They really, truly are scum. I tell you what, I wasn't going to do it because we were a little long, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm just going to tack this on. It doesn't involve me doing much, but there was a rant from Adam Carolla. The only podcast I listen to is the Adam Carolla podcast. He doesn't often get into politics, but when he does, he expresses things so perfectly that I wish I had thought of it first. I wish I'd heard this story first. It's a story about Katy Perry having to pull some shoes. She made these ugly-ass slip-on shoes that have stupid smiley faces on them. And they come in a whole rainbow full of colors, every color you can imagine. There's like eight different colors of these things. One happens to be black. Given that the racists in Virginia have a habit of painting themselves black, it's now being argued by some woke leftists that this is a blackface shoe and it was offensive. And then Katy Perry pulled the shoe and apologized for something that was innocuous. It was stupid. It was dumb, and she should never have done it. This sent Adam Carolla off on about a 4 or 5 minute rant. It's beautiful. It's perfectly executed. It's absolutely true. I endorse 100% of every word said in here, but there is a language warning. There's a lot of salty language. If that's not your thing, you probably want to end the show here. But I think it's important. He's got a much bigger audience than I do, but it's not the same audience. And while he doesn't talk about politics very often, he's mostly libertarian, not a fan of government, not a fan of the woke left. So to that end, I want to play this for you, and then we're out. See you tomorrow.
Jesus Christ, don't apologize. And this isn't hurtful to anybody. Her shoes aren't hurtful to anyone. Blackface may be hurtful to people. Her shoes aren't. Just man up, Katy, if that's possible, and just tell everyone to shut up.
Well, she did you one better. She removed them.
Okay, there you go. There you go, everybody. Have everything shut down. Kick everyone off of every board. Close down. Put a warning sign up in every school, on every fire station. It's everywhere. Just everyone. Just shut down everyone because you find things problematic, you pussies. Or you could do the noble thing, which would be kill yourself. Like, I'm not kidding. Kill yourself. I'm getting tired of you. And obviously, you're miserable. You should be killing yourself. You're miserable. You're miserable piles of shit if this is a complaint. And I don't even think there is a person. Yeah. I really don't think who is the person?
Random people pontificating on
the internet.
All right,
this is Katy Perry's fault. Shut up. She shouldn't be apologizing or releasing statements about how hurtful it is.
You validate.
She should tell everyone to shut up.
Well, this is something that I've been thinking about forever, considering myself an ally of most people. When you start turning your allies into your enemies, they don't know how to be your allies anymore.
And
so why are you doing that?
You're not helping the group you claim to love so much or to look out for by finding this in every corner and every turn. You are not helping a group. If you have a group of people and you go, you know, if I have a daughter, wait a minute, I do have a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I don't say to my daughter, hey, society has it out for you. You're on the low end. The playing field is tilted and you're at the bottom and you're going to have to work twice as hard as any man. And then we walk down the street and everything I find backs up that assertion. Like, oh, see the way that guy's mowing his lawn? See the way he turned when he saw you coming? Because he wants to get away from you. Because you're a woman, and he's trying to hold you down. That poisoned her brain. It would poison her. It's the worst thing you can do for any group ever. And these narcissistic a-holes have no idea what they're doing to the black community or what they're doing to the any community. Or they know they don't care because they're crushing them. This is soul crushing. When you do this to a community, it's the worst thing you can do to any group is to suggest they have a target on their back or they're not wanted or the rest of the people in the community of the group, they all don't like them. I don't care if you're black, Hispanic, lesbian, or female. I don't care if my kid was walking into a Chuck E. Cheese and I said, most of these people here don't like you, okay? So just be careful and understand. That would ruin their entire experience. It would ruin it. You guys are the most selfish assholes on the planet. You're ruining these groups. You're ruining them. In the name of virtue signaling, you get to be a hero. They are going to be ruined and you have no idea what you're doing. You have no idea how evil you are. This thing was like, I'm going to save everybody. I'm going to protect everybody. You're ruining them. You're ruining them with your virtue signaling. You guys are assholes, and you should kill yourselves. Other than that, I have no thoughts on the subject. Nobody, I swear to God, I'm the only one who fully understands how dangerous this is, how insidious this is, to raise a whole nother group, a whole generation of young black kids to think they have a target on their back, living in the freest country in the world. You're ruining them. You have no idea how irresponsible this is. No idea. You're ruining these kids. You're ruining a generation. And you don't care because you get to get reelected or you get to get clicks on your website or you get to do whatever and you get to be a hero. God, I hope you all rot in hell. I'm an atheist and I hope you rot in hell. You have no idea what you're doing in the name of being a hero. I hate you. I hate these people. They're ruining this country. They're ruining this group. The only message should be, we're in the greatest country in the world. We're in the freest country in the world. Now go out and make some hay while the sun shines. Are there going to people like you, people dislike you? Yes, that's that way with everyone. Go get busy. Get busy. You can do whatever you want. Jesus Christ. The part that kills me is I don't mind if somebody is doing something. If you're doing something and it's destructive and you have no idea what you're doing, I'm sort of agnostic about you. It's like, well, he's trying to help, but he's really not helping. But whatever. This is hurting a whole culture. This is destroying a culture, destroying a whole group that's coming up by telling them they have a target on their back and how we live in a society that hates them. Total false narrative. You're doing that and you're making yourself a hero. That's the part that drives me nuts. If you're just wrong or stupid or misdirected, that'd be fine. But you're doing it to make yourself a hero, and it's at their expense. And you guys all just get in a big circle jerk and have at it at the Huffington Post. We are hurting a whole group of people, and you sicken me, and I hope you go to hell. Thank you.